At Bubble Genius, we know that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and sometimes all you've got is man's best friend. We know you'd do anything for your precious pup. When he's a good boy, you give him his favorite treat. When he's gotta go, you take him for a nice walk. When he destroys your favorite shoes, you scold him, lament, and go shoe shopping. And when he eats God knows what and his ass becomes a dirty, stinking mess, well, we've got your backside on that one. You know that we Bubble Geniuses make fun, awesome soaps for people, but did you also know that we make stuff for your best friend? We've got dog soaps, shampoos, and conditioners that'll clean your disgusting doggy in no time and leave him soft, cuddly, and smelling super. And we don't stop with the de-stinking there. We also make Kismet, our flea-repelling doggy perfume that leaves your pup smelling sweet and dreamy. Doggy kisses leaving you offended at your pup's palate? Turn those sour smooches to sweet with Kiss Me, our all-natural breath spray for dogs. Works wonders on humans, too. Pamper your precious pup with genius products and more at bubblegenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
My oath is not so different from the pledge we all make to the flag that waves above and that fills our hearts with pride. They are the words of citizens, and they represent our greatest hope. You and I, as citizens, have the power to set this country's course. You and I, as citizens, have the obligation to shape the debates of our time, not only with the votes we cast, but with the voices we lift in defense of our most ancient values and enduring ideals. Let us, each of us now, embrace with solemn duty and awesome joy what is our lasting birthright. With common effort and common purpose, with passion and dedication, let us answer the call of history and carry into an uncertain future that precious light of freedom. Thank you, God bless you, and may he forever bless these United States of America.
In the USA and covering the whole wide world. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Well, I wish I could get that excited about Buck.
Nothing! Are you kidding? Page 73! Johnson! Maven! R! I'm somebody now! Millions of people look at this book every day! This is the kind of spontaneous publicity, your name in print, that makes people! I'm in print!
Things are going to start happening to me now.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, January 24th, 2013, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius, bath and body products. Vegan, liberal, owned by women. And they're the best. They smell really good, and they get you really clean. So go and buy them. Big show this week, Chez. We have, I don't know if we're going to be able to get to half of the things I have on the list for the show.
Exciting.
Yeah. We've got the inauguration, Ted Nugent, Alex Jones, Republicans trying to rig the elections.
So it's going to be really depressing. That's what you're saying, right up front.
Well, the inauguration was great. I mean, we could start right. talking about that because that was very positive and it was a good day. I mean, I have no complaints about anything that happened on Monday. Although the president almost flubbed the oath again. Did you notice that?
You know, it's funny. I've only seen clips. I didn't watch the whole inauguration.
Well,
I took the day off.
I mean, he kind of stumbled a little bit. He didn't really mess up the lines, but he's about to. Like he kind of chuckled for a second or something. I'm not sure exactly what the vocal intrusion was. But he almost did it. I mean, he almost screwed it up. Because you remember 4 years ago, it was, and partial blame goes on him, but most of the blame goes on John Roberts, who really, the Chief Justice, who really screwed it up 4 years ago. And so they took the oath again at the White House the next day, I think. And there wasn't a Bible, so then they took the oath a third time with a Bible. That was 4 years ago. And so this year, there was the oath on Sunday, which was the official oath, because it has to be on January 20th. And then they did a ceremonial oath on Monday. So if I had any gripe, it would be all of this multiple oath taking.
Well, that pissed off Cornel West, too. He was very angry about the whole co-opting of appropriation of MLK.
What are your? Did you see the speech? The speech was pretty great.
I did see the speech. Yeah. I went back and watched it.
The impressive thing about the speech, and it's always fascinating to see a new president or a reelected president go into that inaugural address, knowing, and we all know this, they all want to have that "ask not what your country can do for you" kind of line in there. The one big line. And they never are able to quite achieve that, are they? I mean, it's really hard to live up to those lines because, you know, with malice towards none and charity towards all, things like that, you know, you got Lincoln, you got Kennedy in there. My guess is those lines are memorable mainly because those presidents were martyred in office.
Yeah, that's something I try not to think about when I think of Barack Obama, although it's always been in the back of my mind, to be very honest.
But
I mean, since the day he was elected.
But the thing is, he didn't really need that. He didn't really need to come up with one of those lines, one of those historic lines. Because
he doesn't simply because he himself is historic.
I mean, the content was historic in and of itself. He didn't need the lines to some sort of turn of phrase to make history. Because what he included in those words were, you know, I mean, there was the very first mention ever of climate change. And he not only mentioned it, he mentioned it in an entire paragraph. I mean, it was a big chunk of the speech where he went over climate change. I couldn't believe it. I mean, he was the very first president. Not even his first inaugural address had mention of climate change in there. And then you have to go back to Bill Clinton to get even a mention of the environment. And Bill Clinton only said, I think the phrase was, the world environment. And it was just thrown into a series of semicolon items. Hmm. That was it. I think he said also a cleaner environment in one of his speeches. I think it was the 1993 inaugural. But no president. I mean, we're boiling ourselves to death, basically. And this is the first time a president has mentioned that thing. But I'm just glad to see it. And then
it's a hot button issue because it's such a controversial one. Because, as you know, as Brian Kilmeade has told me, it's only the corrupt scientists who believe that global warming is real. Brian Kilmeade, who, if he were a real doctor, would figure out how to get his eyes farther apart. There's got to be something he can do about that.
Hey, look, he's still learning how to use his opposable thumbs. But, you know, I mean, I think that's why it was so amazing, because it is sadly a controversial topic. And he hit it head on by just jumping right in and saying, you know, just calling out the deniers and saying, you're full of crap and you got to embrace the science here, the overwhelming scientific consensus on this issue. It's astonishing to me that we're still sitting here debating it. I mean, we're in it. And that's, I mean, and he kind of said that too. He kind of said, you know, we're experiencing it now. All of this crazy weather and the wildfires and the record drought, the temperatures increasing year by year. We're in it. It's time to start confronting this thing.
So, I mean, I get that the environment as a whole has always been a sort of liberal cause celeb. But given what the drought has done to Texas, which is the reddest of red states, I can't figure out what the controversy is over this. I mean, I really can't, aside from just being obstinate for the sake of being obstinate, mm-hmm. of just we refuse to embrace anything that anyone on the left gives a crap about.
That's right.
Because it's just it baffles me. It's like you really don't have anything to lose. I mean, I get it. Yeah, all right. So maybe they'll come down on you know, your deciding to drive a tank to and from the shopping mall. But overall, for the most part, it's like it asks very little of you. Mm-hmm. I get that it asks some sacrifice, which to a lot of conservatives is just verboten. Forget it. It's awful. You know, nobody ever sacrifices anything. We're Americans. We can live how the hell we want. But still, yeah, it's just I don't really know where the vehement denial of that, when there's so much evidence, and when really it shouldn't be a political issue. But, you know, of course, all issues that shouldn't be political issues are often made political issues, certainly by the right these days.
Yeah, I think it's the end times. I think they want to allow the end times to occur.
Right, man. Well, if they truly believe in the end times, then certainly the end times is nothing that a bunch of liberals will be able to stave off. Yeah, it's God.
There's a piece on Media Matters where Eric Erickson said, basically outlined my worst fear in terms of confronting the climate crisis, is that instead of trying to fix it, we should just learn how to deal with it. Like, just accept it as a fact of life and come up with ways to mitigate the effects of it, not so much try to stop the globe from heating up and the weather from getting crazier, which is
right. We're all going to move underground.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Star Blazers or Space Battleship Yamato, whatever the hell it was called.
Yeah,
you know, where we're all just going to move underground because the Earth is going to become unsustainable. We're going to be attacked by the Gamelons.
I love that. I love that reference. And I also love it because maybe there's two people listening to the show right now who will also get it.
I love Star Blazers. Holy crap, I love that.
Greatest anime series next to I think the greatest anime series was Samurai Champloo, but the second greatest series was, Star Blazers, which is the American version of the Japanese anime.
Right. And I mean, I've watched the Japanese, and what's fun is totally getting off subject here. If you go online, I'm pretty sure they've got the entire movie that was made in Japan like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Available to watch.
Yep.
And it's I watched it. It's pretty badass.
Yeah, the difference between I don't want to get too far off on the on an obscure anime series from the late 70s, but I mean, it's hilarious looking at the difference between the Japanese version and the American version. Like, the American version, all of the characters are drinking space water. In the Japanese version, they're all drinking sake.
Right.
You know, in the Japanese version, they've got guys being, you know, in a battle, being sucked out into the void of space, you know, and in the American version, you don't see any of that. It was completely sanitized. In the Japanese version, they've got nudity in there, and like when they do the warp drive, when they do the wave motion drive, and they warp through space, they're, you know, the clothes disappear and things like that. It's hilarious. All of that. I didn't realize any of that when I was like 6 years old watching that on television.
I always thought Starsha of Planet Iskandar was pretty hot, to be very honest.
Yeah.
I had a thing for her.
Almost.
Well, as my girlfriend tells me all the time, I have a thing for everybody. I mean, at least, you know, in my past.
We're going to talk about that.
I grew up, I was a man of many crushes when I was growing up.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that on the after party. We've got a really good, really good conversation
crushes?
In store for the after party. And my favorite moment was, you should mention the other first thing, of course, was marriage equality, which was, again, huge. And it wasn't just huge in terms of him just mentioning it in passing. He mentioned it, he gave it some time, and then he actually invoked Stonewall, which was, like calling out the deniers, like saying we're in it. You know, in terms of the climate crisis.
I can't remember. Who was the conservative commentator who said that Stonewall was basically just a bar fight? Who said that? Somebody said that. Like, I think it was Pat Buchanan, actually.
It might have been Pat Buchanan. Yeah, yeah. A bar fight, right? Has no sense of what actually happened. No knowledge whatsoever of the actual events of those two nights. Pat Buchanan, right?
Piece of crap.
A bar fight, huh? Okay. Mm. But, I mean, this was the watershed moment.
And that's the Holocaust, by the way, was just a drive-by shooting.
God. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, according to Pat Buchanan, Americans should have never gotten into World War II. Anyway, so Stonewall was this watershed moment in the gay rights movement in the late 60s. And it's, and he brought it up. He brought it up in the same you know, was in the same clause as Selma and Seneca Falls, which were, you know, respectively, they were two watershed moments for civil rights and for feminism. So, I mean, I thought that was a really, really big deal. So, you don't need to come up with some interesting turn of phrase that's going to be emblazoned on a memorial someday if your content kicks ass. And his content kicked ass. What he included in that thing was great.
That's true, and it's not true. The content's important, but you know how we are. We love those phrases. We're especially, you know, I mean, granted, those phrases are the stuff that has stayed through time, but especially now, the way our culture is, you know, 140 characters. I mean, we like that one punch. We like, as freaking Mitt Romney said, the zinger, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that content can be, I mean, I absolutely believe that the section with Selma, Seneca Falls, and Stonewall will be remembered that way. It will be memorialized in that, you know, they'll extract it out. I bet it'll be on some memorials and some, you know, in lots of history books and things like that, because it was the first time it was ever said. You know, I think it's, and it may not be that interesting to ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, sort of, you know, interesting word usage. It's
BuzzFeed wrote a really interesting article on the day of the inauguration.
Yeah.
That said basically that whoever's president, you know, whatever, you know, 2 terms from now, is going to have to sort of prepare for the commissioning of the, you know, in Black Ops 2 fashion, the commissioning of the USS Barack Obama, the, you know, the schools named after him, because look, like it or not, he is basically the left's Reagan at this point.
Yeah. Here's the,
and he will be, and since we, dude, we all know it. We've talked about it so many times. Since the left just lionizes FDR, and we all know that at the time the left kind of beat up on FDR the same way they're beating up on Barack Obama. In hindsight, he will be a liberal god.
That's right.
He will be. They will worship him.
Absolutely, and you know, we've already seen that revisionism occur with Bill Clinton. I mean, Bill Clinton was far more moderate and centrist than Barack Obama, but yet he's this, everyone loves him. I mean, the liberals can't wait to just heap praise upon him. We got to take a break back after this.
Chez Show.
All right, we're back. Here's that paragraph. We the people declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still, just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall. To hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth. That's pretty damn good. And it's not only good because it's really, really well written and delivered, of course, but it's got that firstness to it. It's got that historical firstness. He's the first person to say that in an inaugural address.
No, I agree. I agree completely.
So there you go. Let's see what else. Oh, yeah. You know, the moment that I really, really enjoyed was, I think a lot of people were talking about it that day, is when he was going up the stairs after the festivities on the dais there for the inauguration, and he stopped, and the president stopped and looked back across the crowd, which has got to be just a really awe-inspiring thing to do. But I think he was taking an extra, because he'd been sitting up there for, what was it, 90 minutes, 2 hours. I think he was taking an extra minute to kind of maybe offer himself some congratulations, to kind of just look and see what he had accomplished. Because I think he very seldom actually does that. I mean, certainly he's got a big ego, and he knows he's the president. But I don't think he often sits and says, you know what, look, I mean, I was the street urchin on the, you know, the back alleys of Honolulu, you know, not too long ago, and now here I am. And it wasn't just an experimental fluke this time, as some people said about the first, you know, election, 2008. This was something, this was a vindication of his leadership and a vindication of his presidency. And I think that occurs to, I think, and I read somewhere where he did mention that, you know, he actually thought that 2008 might have been a fluke. He thought that himself.
Hmm.
And this election, 2012, turned out to be, you know, that vindication that he was looking for. And consequently, that's why I think we see a much more confident Barack Obama. And you could tell during those, you know, those hours and hours at the inauguration where they were just, the Obamas, the entire family, were just bounding down Pennsylvania Avenue. They were having a blast. I mean, they're dancing there at the reviewing stand, and president's chewing away at his Nicorette gum.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly the president's still smoking. And in fact, the Michelle Obama eye roll, a lip reader,
yeah,
lip reader saw that. And what they could tell is that Boehner was making a joke about, well, he was asking the president whether he'd had a chance to sneak off for a smoke or if the first lady had stopped him. And so Boehner kind of taps Michelle Obama on the shoulder as he's saying that, and that's what generated the eye roll.
I like to think that what generated the eye roll is just Boehner.
Of course.
I was really hoping he'd cry at the eye roll, too.
Yeah, yeah. Or if, you know, she had just kicked him under the table or something.
Good.
Made him cry. That would have been so great. But we didn't get any Boehner crying. Boehner drinking. Lots of drinking at the luncheon after the inauguration.
What I like about that moment is I like to imagine that it's one of those moments where you stop pretending.
Mm-hmm.
Where you stop pretending that that there's a game going on in politics. That, you know what, in the end, we all go get a drink afterwards. Play golf. You know, that's a problem I've always had with the Beltway media and with politics, with politicians, is that, you know, they do a lot of grandstanding for their side. But then you always, you know, at least for a long time, you always got the impression that in the end it was all just a game, and they'd go, you know, they didn't really realize the sort of outcome that affect actual people in it. It's just everybody postured and then they all went, you know, someplace and had a very expensive steak and a bourbon.
Yeah.
And I like, as much as I know that there are people who complain about the idea of well, you know what, everybody has to kind of get along, the Republicans have been such about trying to bring down, just, I mean, without even trying to put any sort of spin on it or trying to couch it in any sort of acceptable terms or subtle terms. I mean, they've just been very honest about trying to bring down Obama. And I love the idea. I love believing that Michelle, and really that Barack Obama, will have none of it.
Mm-hmm.
That they know full well that these people are not their friends.
Yeah.
They're not going to be their friends.
Yeah.
That, you know what, screw it. I have, there's nothing, there is nothing that says that I have to be nice to you or pretend to like you.
Exactly. And of course, she's following all of this stuff, all this crap with the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling and seeing all of the brinksmanship that John Boehner has been almost solely responsible for in the House. And she knows this guy's full of crap. And
yeah, here's a guy who constantly beats up on her husband, constantly.
Yeah.
You know, and who is the, you know, the sort of head government-wise of a party that makes racist comments, mm-hmm. that's completely disrespectful, that, you know, that makes up lies about her husband. And yeah, I'd like to believe that she's just sort of like, you know what, f*** you, I'm not being nice to you.
Yeah, and she's used a considerable amount of restraint, considering the tumultuous first term. and all of the awful things that the Republicans have engaged in, including Southern strategy politics against, you know, the president. And so I think this was an unguarded moment. I think it represents the fact that they are just savoring this and loving it. And they feel there's no other word to use. They feel vindicated. They feel as if their leadership has been confirmed and in a decisive way. Like there was no quibbling over the results of this election. It was barely close. I mean, it was, I think ultimately at the end of the day, 4 percentage points is a pretty big deal. Yeah. And yeah. It looks like the legacy of this president is going to be one of being a popular president and being a successful president. I hate to count our chickens before they hatch, our legacy chickens. But I think what we're going to see over the next 4 years is a lot of progress on the economy. If the economy keeps moving and growing, I think we'll be in great shape. If the president's able to accomplish even just half of the things that he's got on his agenda. I mean, I think there are five things. I think it's immigration, gun control, climate, education, and there's one other, the secret goal. I don't know what the fifth one is. But if he's able to achieve at least several of those things, and get that through Congress and get that through the House of Representatives, considering how divisive things are right now, and do it without any sort of scandal. I don't see any particular scandal on the horizon other than Benghazi, and no one really takes that seriously anyway. I think we're gonna end up, you know, 4 years from now talking about one of the most popular presidents of the last 100 years.
We'll see.
One
what
of the most successful.
I mean, that's the one thing. Yeah, I'm not. You know, who would have thought? Quite frankly, I mean, I hate to bring this up, but you know, who would have thought that George Bush would have had to deal with 9/11?
Yeah.
You know, so anything can happen. I'm not trying to predict any of that, but I do think that you're right about certain types of scandals that I think are not going to be a problem with Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to get, you know, the Clinton style. You know, Barack's not getting in the Oval Office.
On that note, we're going to take a break for a Bubble Genius back after this. Yeah. This is a family show. Good for the whole family. Show is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius, the best bath and body products anywhere. You go to the internet, you type in BubbleGenius.com, you peruse their amazingly large selection of soaps and soapy style products in all kinds of shapes and sizes and smells. They smell wonderful and they get you nice and squeaky clean. Here's the latest word from BubbleGenius.com.
At Bubble Genius, we know that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and sometimes all you've got is man's best friend. We know you'd do anything for your precious pup. When he's a good boy, you give him his favorite treat. When he's gotta go, you take him for a nice walk. When he destroys your favorite shoes, you scold him, lament, and go shoe shopping. And when he eats God knows what and his ass becomes a dirty, stinking mess, well, we've got your backside on that one. You know that we Bubble Geniuses make fun, awesome soaps for people, but did you also know that we make stuff for your best friend? We've got dog soaps, shampoos, and conditioners that'll clean your disgusting doggy in no time and leave him soft, cuddly, and smelling super. And we don't stop with the de-stinking there. We also make Kismet, our flea-repelling doggy perfume that leaves your pup smelling sweet and dreamy. Doggy kisses leaving you offended at your pup's palate? Turn those sour smooches to sweet with Kiss Me, our all-natural breath spray for dogs. Works wonders on humans, too. Pamper your precious pup with genius products and more at BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Legacy Chickens. Make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BobAndChez. That's our names. And when you go to checkout from BubbleGenius.com, and you'll get 15% off your entire order. Go and do it today. I think we've got a location for our meetup in Johnson City, Tennessee on the 26th of February.
What do you got?
It's either going to be, it's one of two places, and we're going to have to decide which one. It's either going to be Knight's Sports Bar and Grill.
Dear God. Right.
or it's just going to be the bar inside the Carnegie Hotel. It's going to be one or the other.
And how far is Knights? Is it within walking distance?
Yes, it's within walking distance.
Okay, good, because I'm not. Well, it's going to be like 10 degrees, dude.
It's going to be within stumbling distance, I should say.
Yeah, but it's going to be like 10 degrees.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, I guess the Carnegie Hotel would be okay, but we're staying there. I don't want there to be any incident.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No, that does make sense.
Like, suddenly a bunch of people are there, and, you know, I don't want to get booted out because...
We're going to get taken in by the town sheriff.
Yeah, that's right.
Going to be, you know, Roscoe P. Coltrane.
But the real question is, do we want to go to, you know, a sports bar?
I don't care. I mean, what else is there?
I don't know.
I don't know Johnson City, Tennessee very well.
There's a place that's within short driving distance, but, you know, and I've been told that transportation could be arranged for us, but I would rather just be as close as possible to, you know, my bed. You know what I mean?
That's true.
But so it's going to be either Knights Sports Bar and Grill, Knights, that's with a K. And or it's going to be the bar inside the Carnegie Hotel. But it's going to be the night of the 26th of February. It's just a little more than a month away. And then on the 27th, we're going to be speaking on a panel at ETSU on social media and politics. And that's open to the public. So you can come to that, too. So we're going to do both of those things. I just a couple last thoughts about the inauguration. First of all, Al Roker scared the crap out of me. I don't know if you saw that, but it was right
in
front of
the screaming thing.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I guess if you were watching the NBC network coverage, you knew that it was Al Roker. If you were watching MSNBC, there was no mention whatsoever from the semi-napping Martin Bashir that Al Roker was shouting. It was just suddenly there, you know, because, look, let's face it, we all do it. Whenever the president of the United States, regardless of party, gets out of a car and is walking along where there's large crowds of people. Maybe I'm the only one, but I'd be surprised if I was. I'm looking in that crowd, and I'm scanning that crowd, hoping that there's not, you know, someone in there with a gun.
Right.
And so President and the First Lady hop out of the limousine, and they're just, I mean, they may as well have just started running. I mean, they looked so happy. They were just they might have had like jetpacks on their backs and were flying down Pennsylvania Avenue right in front of the North Portico of the White House, getting ready to go into the reviewing stand. And suddenly Roker, this guy, well, and I didn't know it was Roker, but suddenly this guy starts shouting, "Mr. President, Mr. President, Mr. President," and he's going nuts. And so you think, you know. And he's like reaching out and he's like leaning over the fence. And I had seen in an aerial shot, like a bunch of people run up to one of the railings, the guardrails. And I saw security push them back. And then it was a couple of minutes after that when Al Roker starts shouting right at the guardrail, not 10 feet from the president. So, and then I realize, oh, and then he turns to the camera, oh, and it's big doofus Al Roker.
Right.
And then he went and did the same thing to...
He wanted to apologize for crapping his pants at the White House.
That's right. Man, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I bet, you know who hasn't forgotten about that? Al Roker.
Al Roker, right. Al Roker.
If I crap my pants at the White House, I would never forget that. If I crap my pants, period, I would never forget that.
That'll be on the 27th or the 26th of February at Knights Sports Bar and Grill.
That's actually a night where I'm probably going to crap my pants.
Come on out and join us for the Bob and Chez Show meetup, Johnson City, Tennessee, where Chez will crap his pants.
More than likely. Wouldn't be the first time.
And so Al Roker did the same thing to Joe Biden, and Joe Biden ran over and gave a big handshake, big hug. Joe Biden was happy, too. I mean, they were all just like, I don't know, highest kites or something. But so that was great. The inauguration was a fun event. We're going to be talking about Beyonce and whether she did or did not lip sync on the after party. It's not going to take time on this show. We're going to see. We're going to determine one way or the other. We're going to make the final call.
Are we really? We're going to make the final call, regardless of what the reality is. We're going to make the final call.
That's right. That'll be on the after party coming up Friday noon Eastern.
You know, there was it Beyonce? I think there was something that was circulating a while back that I'm pretty sure it was Beyonce. It was like the pre-board sound of Beyonce singing when she did the Today Show, when she, you know, performed on the Plaza. So in other words, it was the sound going into the board, not the sound coming out, you know, after they basically engineered the crap out of it. And you can auto-tune live, by the way.
Yeah.
And she just sounded like hell. Just like, just awful.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Hmm. I mean, I think it's available on YouTube. I think if you look it up, it's there somewhere. But yeah, I mean,
well, Beyonce,
you can really
sounding,
get away with not being able to sing at all these days. It's so easy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about all of that because there is, you know, there are lots of fine points in this to be made because, and again, I don't want to waste any time with it on the free show because we've got lots of real issues to talk about. But we'll waste lots of time with it on the after party. Get deeply into it.
Lovely.
So let's see. Oh, right. Ted Nugent said something really stupid. As
There's
usual.
A shock.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Ted Nugent coming up in the next segment and his latest threat against the president. We're going to play, for the first time ever, we're going to play some Ted Nugent audio on the show. Maybe we'll get into Alex Jones, too, and an actual really important issue that we'll talk about right after this break is the Republicans are trying to steal the future presidential elections in many, many states. And we're going to get into that right after a quick break, back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, we're back. So the Republicans are becoming increasingly, let's just put it blunt. Oh, yeah, but I mean, insane, right? But they're also being, as John Boehner so aptly put it, they're being annihilated. But the president's not doing it. They're being self-annihilated.
Oh, yeah. No, you wrote that today, and I put that up yesterday. It's hilarious to listen to Boehner saying that, you know, the Obama administration is out to annihilate the Republican Party. Obama's administration doesn't have to do crap. It can just sit there. The Republican Party is doing just fine annihilating itself.
That's right. Well, so what they're doing in order to make up for the fact that they're basically dying a slow death politically, they've decided that they're going to just start rigging the elections.
And that's exactly what they're going to do. Yeah, and I mean, it's more so now than ever. That's become, for me, I mean, I know that this is something that people have been talking about for a while, and it should be one of the biggest issues. You know, a lot of people said it was one of the biggest issues in the presidential election leading up, the idea that they were sort of, you know, doing what they could to disenfranchise voters. But yeah, the gerrymandering thing has just, once you realize and accept that the Republican Party can't survive like this, it really highlights the efforts they're going through to just say, well, screw it, we'll rig it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what they're doing is there was the thing on Inauguration Day, where in Virginia they had the one Democratic vote who could have stopped this gerrymandering in Virginia, where the gerrymandering would have eliminated one Democratic district, and the one Democrat who would have decided against the issue and killed the bill, that Democrat was invited to the inauguration festivities, and while he was away, the Virginia Republicans pushed through that bill and passed it.
Yeah, it's just complete scumbag behavior.
Yeah.
But it's all they've got. It's all they can do. They got nothing else.
Well, and it gets worse. I mean, this is actually worse than, well, it's hard to imagine anything worse than the voter ID laws and rolling back the early voting, which they tried to do, as you said, throughout the 2012 election. But they're in six states controlled by Republicans. I mean, you talk about all politics being state and local. This is a big effing deal. In six states, the Republican governors and legislatures are about to pass laws that will apportion the electoral votes based on congressional district. It's not going to be winner take all in Florida, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Wisconsin. They are passing laws in which the electoral votes, you know, will be split up between the two presidential candidates. Meaning, of course, that the Republicans having more congressional districts in their favor in the rural sections of these states would get more electoral votes.
Yep.
Than the blue areas that have higher populations.
Right. And the stated reason why they're doing this is because they don't want to disenfranchise rural voters. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Even though what this will do is that there could be a winner of a state, one of these states, in the electoral votes, but not in the popular vote. Meaning more people in these blue areas. The blue areas, you look at the congressional map and the results of the 2012 election, the blue areas that the president won are the areas where there are people. The red areas have no people. Or, you know, I'm generalizing, but fewer people.
Right, absolutely. No, urban centers, places where there are high population concentrations, a lot of them, yeah, tend to go Democrat.
So the Philadelphia congressional district will have the same number of electoral votes as the gigantic no man's land in Pennsylvania, that congressional district, the upper part of the T of Pennsylvania. It's gigantic. It's a huge congressional district because there are very few people there. But that congressional district will get one electoral vote. Philadelphia, which has millions of people, will get one electoral vote.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
This is the scam they are running in order to win swing states. And they've got to be stopped. This has got to be put to a stop. Because, I mean, Virginia, they're about ready to pass it.
Yeah.
And Bob McDonald will absolutely sign it. They're taking advantage of the fact that they control the state legislatures and the governor's offices to rig these elections against future Democratic presidential candidates. And it will absolutely swing the election in favor of the Republicans. I mean, if it's close, if it comes down to the swing states, which right. We've seen that year after year, election year after election year, that's where the elections are decided. Yep. Florida, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And it's all done because they can't win any other way. They can't do it now.
They have no policy. They have no policy. They have no real coalition anymore other than conservative, white, Southern Christians. Everyone else has abandoned them or is in the process of abandoning them. So they just don't have any votes anymore, except they can still win at the state level. They're still controlling these very, very important states. And that can't be overlooked in our schadenfreude and our glee over the results of the 2012 election.
Right, sure. Because when you break it down to like these individual districts, especially the rural districts, you get idiots. Mm-hmm.
So this is very, very bad. And this is something we need to keep an eye on. I mean, I'm talking about it got to be a top shelf issue.
Yeah, it does. I think it's actually the issue
when
it comes to politics moving forward.
So, I mean, between that, they are doing everything they can to rig these elections. I mean, every angle. And that is why, I mean, you talk about another reason why we need to do this. That is why we need to federalize our elections. To get the federal government involved, take it away from the states. Because as Dennis Miller, we said this on the show before, but when Dennis Miller was funny, he had this one great line. He said, states can't effing pave roads. And yet we're handing over to these states our ability to vote, our most sacred, obligation as members of a democracy. Here's the Virginia piece. Legislation that would apportion Virginia's electoral votes by winner of each congressional district instead of the current winner-take-all system emerged from a Senate subcommittee today without a recommendation. The vote in the Privileges and Elections Subcommittee was 3-3 with Senator Jill Holtzman-Vogel, R. Fauquier County, siding with two Democrats on the six-member panel to produce a tie. The legislation now heads to the...
I'm sorry, what the hell's the name of that county again?
Fauquier.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, believe me,
I'm Beavis and Butthead. I'll laugh at that every time.
I grew up in Virginia, and you know, there were two areas that would always make us laugh and giggle as ridiculous teenagers. Fauquier County and, of course, Norfolk. Hmm. The legislation now heads to the full committee, where a 10-5 GOP majority is likely to send it to the floor of the full Senate for a vote. So now it's full committee. Republicans control 10-5. So it's going to go to the full Senate.
Great. So they've changed the conditions of the Kobayashi Maru so they can beat the test.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They're using the James T. Kirk strategy.
Yeah. You get a commendation for original thinking.
It really is, you know. But, I mean, you see, hear these things, all these ridiculous hipsters saying, well, both sides are the same. Well, when we were in the midst of the dark ride of the Bush years, I don't remember a single Democrat coming up with this idea. Hey, you know, let's apportion the electoral votes based on congressional district.
Yeah.
Let's do that in Texas or Oklahoma, Idaho. Unbelievable what these guys will stoop to.
Well, again, we've said this so many times, because they don't consider it cheating. Mm-hmm. They don't, because the way they see it, everything else besides them is illegitimate. Therefore, it doesn't matter. It doesn't count. The people's decision to put Democrats in office is meaningless. It's still illegitimate because they have a birthright to power. They are owed it. And if they are not in power, if they don't attain power for power's sake, then nothing else matters.
That's right. Because meanwhile, Acorn, which doesn't exist anymore, is clearly stealing the elections for Democrats.
Right. Yeah. Acorn and the new Black Panther Party.
Yeah, the new Black Panther Party. Those two guys in Philadelphia have somehow hijacked the entire national election.
Yeah, and all the rest of those welfare queens and people who want stuff.
Oh, God. Hey, speaking of dog whistles, here's Ted Nugent last week.
It's Ted Nugent, and I'm part of a very great experiment in self-government where we, the people, determine our own pursuit of happiness and our own individual freedom and liberty. Not to be confused with the Barack Obama gang.
There it is, the Barack Obama gang, right?
Who believes in we, the sheeple, and actually is attempting to re-implement the tyranny of King George that we escaped from in 1776. And if you want another Concord Bridge, I got some buddies.
Oh, do you really, Ted? Wow. Holy crap, I am shaking in my boots over you and your f***ing redneck friends.
Yeah.
You and people who still think you matter.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so Ted Nugent and five yokels with their AR-15s are going to take on the entire American military.
It's staggering, this fantasy that these jackasses have. Then, I mean, you got Nugent, you got the judge down in Texas, mm-hmm. who said that if UN troops roll into town, he and the local sheriff are going to take them on. And Joe Arpaio, which is something I'm writing about for Banter right now, yeah. Joe Arpaio and his posse that he has dispatched to protect, local schools in Maricopa County, because they're the front line, these, septuagenarian idiots armed with, freaking Glocks.
And it can't be overlooked that Steven Seagal is a member of that posse. I'm not making that up. That's real.
I know. Trust me. I know. I hear about stuff like this, and I have those moments where I just think that the reason why other countries have existed for as long as they have, one of two things. Either if they're as large as, say, the Soviet Union was, they rule with an iron fist. That's one way. The other way is to just be small. That's why countries like England and France, whatever, they don't have these massive, massive divisions. Massive.
Well, that's the warning of secession. I mean, the ultimate result of secession is a Balkanization of the United States.
Right.
And that's
We're just too big. We are. I mean, the people who live in rural Alabama may as well be on another planet from the people who live here in Los Angeles. Or the people who live in New York City, or the people who live in Hawaii, or the people who live, essentially almost north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad to think that it's still, we've still got sort of the Confederacy brewing. But yeah, I mean, there are times that I look at us and I'm just like, we are a failed experiment. because we just can't be. There's just no way humanly possible that, and I know that this is the argument that a lot of those idiots in the South make, that, you know, our concerns are not the concerns of those people up north, of carpetbaggers. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, but in some ways it's true, though. It's like, it's just, I, as someone who lives in Los Angeles, California, cannot even, like, you know, the people who live, who give a crap about the things that the people in, you know, West Virginia, for the most part, give a crap about, it's something I can't even fathom. I mean, it's completely alien to me.
Well, and it's not just their ideas are wrong, but their ideas have become contradictory. And this also, this dovetails nicely into why they're rigging the elections now. Because, I mean, listen to what Ted Nugent is threatening to do. I mean, what he's threatening to do is to attack the United States military. He and his buddies, who would, if he and his buddies decided to attack something, they're not going to be attacking the presidential motorcade. They're going to have to attack American military personnel. Well, that's what they're doing is they're engaging in secessionist behavior.
Right. Well, you say that a lot, but I think the point that you often miss on that, and of course I'm not criticizing you, but the point that you often miss is I think these people truly believe, in much the same way that I'm willing to bet, you know, certain members of the South believe just before the Civil War, I think that these people believe, kind of like those crazy militias believe, that once they even call it this, it hits the fan, you know, that's what preppers call it. I think they even have the acronym for it. But once that happens, I think they believe that members of the military will come over to their side, that they won't be willing to fire on. Not only will they not be willing to fire on other Americans, but they'll actually join in their side for the coup against the government.
Yes, but not all of them. I mean, they will eventually.
Not all, but they
I know.
Enough.
I totally get that point.
They believe enough.
Yeah, they will believe enough, but I mean, they're still going to be.
They've got that Turner Diaries fantasy going.
Yeah, well, that's what happened with secession in 1861. I mean, they were able to, you know, with each seceding state, they were able to commandeer and turn a lot of the military people from those states.
Exactly.
That's how they fired on Fort Sumter. They commandeered basically the ground troops and artillery, you know, outside of Charleston Harbor. Or around Charleston Harbor, and fire on the on the fort, and then so I do get that they would accumulate military support here and there sporadically, but I mean I do think that this is a very different time, both in terms of our attitude about secession and in terms of our military itself, and I don't think they would have much success, and even still, if they did get members of the military to fire. To join their cause, they would end up firing on other members of the military because right. There would be
they,
members they of the military that'd be
seven
loyal.
Days in May. They have this 7 days in May fantasy, you know, that, right. that somewhere at the top, there's a group of military leaders who've had enough of the president, had enough of governmental overreach.
Yeah.
And they're going to help engage in this, in this war to create real freedom in this country. It's a completely insane delusion.
Yeah. Well, it's simplistic. It's simplistic, and that's the crux of it, because, I mean, yeah, there, a lot of members of the military are conservative. And they make no mistake. I mean, the military is a conservative operation run by conservatives. That said, they're also, you know, they take an oath to serve their country, and ultimately the commander-in-chief of the military is their commander. I mean, that's who they swear an oath to, you know, obey the commands of that person. And so I think it would be very difficult for a lot of members of the military today. I mean, we're talking about career volunteers, career military members, to go against that oath because effing Ted Nugent, you know, said, "Hey, I got some buddies. Why don't you come over and join me?"
I have that vision of that's how this kind of thing starts. Yeah. It's a bunch of a bunch of dumb yokels sitting around a fire somewhere drinking warm Schaefer. You know, and thinking, you know, if we got enough people together, I bet you we could, take a nuclear silo. We could. If we could do, Earl's got that truck. It can go through, you can pile that through one of them there fences, and we can get in there. We're smart. We're smart people.
Yeah. Well, I think I think it's a fantasy. I think it's, you know, it's just a sore loser fantasy. I mean, they
it's a sore loser, and it's a hyper-masculine fantasy.
That's right. And it's, of course, contradictory, because it goes against everything they said during the 8 years of the Bush administration, which, by the way, was no bastion of supporting our freedom and civil liberty, by the way. I didn't even play the clip that Ted Nugent talks about assassinating the president.
Whatever, screw him. The Secret Service should go talk to him.
All right. And they already, you know what? They already have. This is like the third time in 5 years that he's done it. It's absurd, this guy. All right, hey, after party is tomorrow, noon Eastern. Subscribe already. Take care. Bye.